From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A week from today, it's finally Election Day. It's supposed to be when everything is settled. This year, voters could be forgiven for wondering. Donald Trump has talked ceaselessly of rigging. Hillary Clinton backers warn of intimidation. And then there's hacking and Russia. This hour On Point, bracing for the vote 2016. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you worried about real threats? Are you worried about all the warnings? Worried all the talk will discourage voters? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us first today from Washington, Josh Meyer, senior reporter for NBC News Investigative Unit. Josh Meyer, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
You've been reporting on concern about the risk of violence on Election Day. From what origin, Josh?
Well, I think a lot of law enforcement officials are concerned about that. Homeland Security people, local police, and certainly the Clinton campaign and poll watchers and others. There's a wide array of people that are watching. I don't think it's overstating the case to say alarm at some of the comments that have been made. When I wrote the story last week, there were people showing up at Trump rallies with Hillary's Clinton's photo with a bullseye on it. One person had her head on a stake, depicting her head on the stake. And then hours after the story ran, somebody showed up with a effigy of Clinton with a noose around her neck. And then I think it was a couple days later at a rally in Vegas, one of the Trump rally earlier speakers called for a revolution, saying we're going to go march on Washington and essentially burn the place down. So, you know, whether that will translate into any actual violence or not remains to be seen, but it has put a lot of people on edge.
Donald Trump has been very explicit about asking his backers to come out and look for voting irregularities, for fraud at polling places.
Right.
And that's been a repeated request. It goes on right now. Trump backers say, well, that's what we want to do. We want to watch. We want to make sure things are fair and square. How do you get from that to violence?
You know, it could start very easily. So there's a couple of different ways this could go. One of them is that Trump supporters, you know, and as I mentioned in the story last week, you know, some of them were protesting outside of a Democratic candidate for Congress in Pennsylvania, I believe it was, Virginia, and just to protest. So some of them might be doing this of their own accord. Some of the problems could probably more likely escalate as a result of them watching the polls and people skirmishing back and forth. And again, the violence could be the other way too. There could be people trying to push back against Trump poll watchers. So it's not just them. It's just created a volatile situation where you have people at the polls, you know, trying to figure out who's voting, who's not. And with all of the allegations of dead voters voting and illegal aliens voting and so forth, it's a pretty flammable situation, I think, according to law enforcement.
So many questions have been raised, and Donald Trump has been right out front in raising the most. Here he was just earlier, or I guess now it's November, so last month in Grand Junction, Colorado.
So many cities are corrupt, and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country. There's no voter fraud. No, there's no voter fraud. Take a look at St. Louis. Take a look at Philadelphia. Take a look at Chicago.
Yeah, and on and on. We've heard a lot about that. One of his operatives, Roger Stone, was recently on the alt-right Alex Jones radio show, InfoWars. Jones said, quote, clearly they're trying to steal it, and asked Stone what he intended to do to save the election. Here was Trump backer Roger Stone.
Need right now more than anything else is people. People can go to stopthesteal.org and sign up to work on Election Day conducting exit polls with us. We will train you, we will assign you, we will help you through the process, but we need good men and good women, patriots, who will donate their time. We need an army of InfoWar warriors to help us with this project.
An army of InfoWar warriors. Josh Meyer, in preparation for voting day, and look, all this can get way overblown, and we should look at the history of American voting and say, overall, it's incredibly positive. People go out and they vote, and of course, there have been problems, but what are the preparations that are being made to try and deal with any potential problems at the polls a week from today, Josh?
You know, it's a good question. I think that there's a lot of you know, there's a lot of preparations underway. One of the things that many people keep citing about this as a strength of the American electoral system is the fact that it's so fragmented and most of it resides within local communities. But that also means that the responses to this are not coordinated in any way, and so it differs from one place to another. But, you know, I think that I talked to the Association of State Secretaries of State, and they are really trying to get the word out, instructing people with very specific imperatives about how to make sure that that people observe a proper distance from voters, don't intimidate them, don't harass them, how to make sure that they the poll workers know who to call within local police departments, state authorities, and then even the Justice Department's special, you know, unit for watching for civil rights violations if there are problems that occur. So I think people are trying to get the word out. I know that they're very on edge about that. I think one thing that they're concerned about is that you would have, the Democrats are mobilizing too, the Clinton campaign, to have people at the polls. So you might have situations where there's, you know, people from both sides or several different sides there too. And don't forget, there were problems in the last couple of elections with the new Black Panther Party. So you have some other players here too. It's not fair just to criticize the Trump people for this. I think that there's a lot of concerned people agitating from several different directions.
Josh Meyer with NBC News. Thanks for joining us today, Josh. We're going to dive on in. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Here was President Obama. This was at a press conference with Italian Prime Minister, the Italian Prime Minister in October, telling Republican nominee Donald Trump. He said, stop whining about rigged elections.
I have never seen in my lifetime or in modern political history any presidential candidate trying to discredit the elections and the election process before votes have even taken place. It's unprecedented. It happens to be based on no facts.
And here, Hillary Clinton in Manchester, New Hampshire last week.
All this talk about the election being rigged, trying to stir up people who are supporting him at his rallies, that is a direct threat to our democracy.
Jessica Hoosman joins us now from New York, senior reporting fellow with ProPublica. She's part of ProPublica's Election Land team. They're going to be watching every precinct in the country now and through Election Day, looking for any kind of voting irregularity. They've got 300 reporters around the country signed on to feed information, monitor reports, and they're following all kinds of feeds, social media and Google searches and all the rest. Jessica Hoosman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Can you take us just to the function of poll watching? How has that been done historically? Who does it? And what do you anticipate next Tuesday?
Sure. Just a quick little addition from your introduction. We actually have 403 reporters.
Hey, numbers
the
growing all
now.
The time. Okay, 403.
Numbers growing
good.
All the time. But to your question, poll watchers are traditionally volunteers that volunteer through political parties. So while it has been speculated that Trump himself will produce poll watchers, that's actually not how it works. In order to be a poll watcher, you traditionally have to be signed up by your local party, the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. They're specifically trained in how to follow the law and watch the polls to make sure that nothing bad is happening. Traditionally, there is one poll watcher from each party at every precinct to make sure that it's a bipartisan effort and that facts aren't twisted. And so and traditionally this has been a pretty mild effort. They have not been in your face. They're watching silently as things go on. They are there to flag any problems, whether they are inadvertent or more purposeful. But really they've been turned into an entirely different thing this election. And I think people have a very different idea of what a poll watcher is this election versus in previous elections where they really didn't get much attention at all.
Well, what do you mean? So what are you saying? A poll watcher is something new now, or what are you describing?
Sure. No, I don't think that it's anything new. Written into law, it is the exact same thing as it was in 2012, as it is now. But I think people have this idea that you can just volunteer and show up at a polling place and watch. And we've seen this rhetoric going across. People say, just show up at the polls, blend in, make sure nothing bad happens. But that's not how poll watching works. That is not a legal way to be a poll watcher. You actually have to be signed up. The precinct has to know that you are there. If you do not follow those rules, you are in violation of the law, and it's a problem. And I think that I don't know that there's a huge indication that this is going to be a sweeping problem across the country, but I think several precincts will see people trying to show up and be informal poll watchers, and that is not allowed, and they risk being arrested if they do that.
Well, but that's explicitly what the Trump campaign is calling for, and from the very highest levels. I mean, I've heard Mike Pence specifically say poll watchers are great, but they're not enough, and we need to come up and be involved, be watching. Is there no way to do that under law?
Right. So in most states, there is an electioneering line, and so it's 100 feet or 200 feet or in some states even 300 feet away from the entrance of the polls. And you can go and you could, in theory, stand outside of that line. And as long as you are not violating the law in any other way, harassing people, being disruptive, then in theory, you could stand behind that line and watch things.
But that's 100 feet from the polling place. That's usually that's outside the building, right?
It is always outside the building.
So you're not going to see much in terms of how... I mean, how could you watch the voting from that vantage?
You couldn't. So the rhetoric around poll watching here has been frankly ridiculous. I mean, you're talking about in places where we have always had poll watchers. So, for example, I spoke to the person who runs elections in St. Louis just a couple of days ago, and I asked if they were seeing a huge influx of poll watchers, and he said, well, you can't, because in the last two elections, we have had one poll watcher from every party at every single precinct. That is the maximum amount that's required by that's allowed by law, and that's as much as we're going to see this year. So the influxes here, I think, are a little bit farcical.
Well, we'll see if that's what actually happens. That's part of the concern, I guess, from different vantages. Jessica Huseman with ProPublica and Election Land there. Please stand by. We're looking at the election 1 week from today and all the talk of rigging, intimidation, hacking. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this about the election 1 week from today and all the talk of rigging and intimidation and hacking. We're going to dive into all of it right here. You can join us this hour. Are you ready, past ready, to cast your vote? Are you worried about what you'll find at the polls? Are you going to be out there monitoring, watching? Are you worried all the talk of intimidation, rigging will keep people away when we need to be voting? And poll workers in particular, what do you expect? Is this all overblown or not? Certainly from the Trump side, lots and lots and lots of questions raised about the integrity of the voting system. This was Donald Trump in Colorado on Sunday, saying he's skeptical even about the state's ballot mailing system.
Do you think those ballots are properly counted? Do you think? So when you send them in, do you think they're properly counted? You can check on your ballot to make sure it's counted properly. I know they're all saying, oh, of course, everything is so legitimate. Everything is so... Perhaps I'm a more skeptical person.
Donald Trump putting skepticism all over the place around this vote. Last month, after someone firebombed the GOP's headquarters in Orange County, North Carolina, his VP running mate, Mike Pence, condemned that as an act of political terrorism and went to the site. In a news conference there, he talked about claims that the election will be rigged.
Donald Trump and I are encouraging all of our supporters around the country, and frankly, every American, whatever their politics, to take the opportunity to be involved in a respectful way in providing accountability at our polling places.
Of course, Mike Pence has been involved in politics for a long time, and reporters there pressed him on whether or not poll watching, as we've known it, is not an effective exercise in itself. And he says, yes, but.
No, I think poll watching and the accountability that's built into state laws that govern elections has served us well, but we're encouraging all of our supporters, given the enormous importance of this election, given the dramatic choice the American people face in this election, to be involved, to take the opportunity, to respectfully participate in the electoral process on a precinct-by-precinct level.
Be involved, take the opportunity, precinct-by-precinct. Jessica Huseman, if people show up and they say, look, we want to get in there. We want to watch this. We want to see this take place. And they're And they insist on that. What happens? I mean, at my polling place, you know, it's a bunch of very nice retired people by and large with cookies and tea. And what happens if you've got kind of a pushy would-be informal poll watchers?
Well, they get arrested. I think that's that's the long and short of it. So they're generally asked to leave. If they don't, then they are escorted out by law enforcement and they can be arrested because violating election law is in fact a crime. And so there's not going. There's a lot of talk about how people are going to do this, but by law they cannot. And the precinct workers that I've been talking to are very well prepared for something like this happening. If someone shows up and they are not a registered poll watcher, then and they begin to be disruptive and refuse to leave, then they will be arrested. And so people should be prepared for that. And people should know that that can happen to them if they choose to be disruptive at the polls. And that's kind of it.
Back up with us and look at the overall skepticism that Donald Trump, and that's a pretty mild word, has expressed around the outcome of voting, the integrity of voting. When you look at the integrity of voting in the United States, what's the track record and what do you anticipate next Tuesday?
The track record of voting integrity in the United States has been very good. It has always been very good. There has not been any major accusations of voter fraud. To be clear, voter fraud does very occasionally happen, very occasionally. And the concerns over voter fraud generally do stem from a very real place of anxiety. But historically, factually, the type of voter fraud that is being bandied around by the Trump campaign and in some cases the Democratic campaign doesn't realistically happen. In-person voter fraud is exceedingly rare, and I don't expect it to happen during this election. I think that Donald Trump is behind in the polls. I think he is trying to sow doubt in the election. He is succeeding in doing so, and I think this is kind of his last charge into the last week of the election, still being behind in the polls as he has been for weeks. Is to sow doubt.
Not so far behind now, I must point out. Not as far as he once was.
Not as far as he once was, but he is still comfortably behind. And I don't think
comfortably
anybody
who for
has,
who?
Comfortably, you know, for I guess the Clinton campaign. He is still quite far behind.
I'm
her
sure that's not comfortable for Trump supporters, but I mean
certainly not.
The closer things get, the more this becomes an issue, whether or not there has been any kind of irregularity in the voting. Will it be clear if there are broad charges made about rigging? Will we be able to nail down in a hurry the credibility of those charges?
Right. I don't think that there will be broad charges of or at least broad charges with any factual heft when it comes to Election Day. I don't think that he can reasonably make those charges. And I think his own Republican Party has already said that there is no factual basis for the fraud allegations that he is bringing. And so I don't think that if he were to make those accusations, he would even be supported by his own party.
What about on the hacking front, Jessica? People are worried about that. There have been instances in Arizona, in Illinois. We have the federal government saying that Russia has been involved with leaks during the campaign season. What about the vulnerability to some kind of computer hacking that would distort outcomes generally or in specific arenas where they really matter? With our electoral college system, it can come down to just a few precincts that make a big difference.
Sure. So I think that the hacking concerns have been overblown as it relates to actual hacking of the election itself. So you are correct. There have been instances of hacking. It's not clear, I guess, from whom, but those have been on voter registration systems, which are computerized and connected to the internet. They have not been and will not be to voting machines, because if anybody who's seen a voting machine should know that voting machines are not connected to the internet in the vast majority of cases, and so it is impossible to hack them. You would have to have physical access to every single machine for a substantial period of time to change the results of any given election machine.
Because it's not linked to the internet, you're saying?
Because they're not linked to the internet. They're not connected to each other. They're not linked to the internet. So you can't hack them. This isn't a computer game. This isn't an episode of Mr. Robot, right? This is the United States election.
What about how those results are reported to central counting and tallying centers? Is that by internet?
The reporting process is incredibly bipartisan. In the vast majority of states, results have to be signed off by both parties before they move on to the next level.
Yeah, but we're talking about hacking here. Could those results signed off on be tampered with, hacked on their way to central tallying stations?
I'm not sure. But even if they were, it would be very easy to fact check those because we have print offs of what the election should be. And so if in transit, I guess, they get hacked from point A to point B, it would be very easy to go back to point A and say, hey, is this correct? And then they would be able to say yes or no. There are checks and balances throughout this entire process. So even if one horrible entity was able to hack, quote unquote, one part of the process, there are so many checks and balances that we would be able to very easily go back and make sure those results are accurate. And at every stage of this process, there are traditionally two people or several people from both parties signing off on the process as it goes through the motions. So the idea that this entire vote could be rigged would have to be a massive conspiracy between the people who make the voting machines, between the people who count the votes, between the people who verify the votes, between the voters themselves. Like, there are so many moving parts here. There are so many checks and balances that it is frankly impossible and in fact absurd to suggest that hacking could play a major part in the election. And I think journalists have themselves to blame for this, right? There were a couple, and I won't name the journalist, but there was a tweet that went out yesterday without any context at all saying 47 states have contacted the Department of Homeland Security to make sure that their systems can't be hacked. And I think that's really dangerous, right? When we suggest without any context at all that the vote can be hacked without telling them what part we're talking about, which is, in fact, these registration systems, which are entirely separate from the vote itself, then we are doing a disservice to the American people. This is a sensitive subject. This is an emotionally fueled subject. This is something that people are very worried about. And for us as journalists to present any shade of doubt that this election is in danger of being toyed with is upsetting, and we should do better.
I mean, the thing is, it's not shades of doubt. It's being proclaimed in advance of the election by a major party candidate from every podium that he stands at. And on the other side, the fears of intimidation are also being proclaimed loudly by many Clinton operatives. So, I mean, it's not as though it's not the parties and candidates themselves at the presidential campaign level that are making these assertions. Jessica Huseman, please stand by at ProPublica with the Election Land team. They're going to have 400-plus reporters out in the field, be monitoring all kinds of election on Election Day, 1 week from today. With us now as well from Washington is Howard Fineman, Global Editorial Director for the Huffington Post Media Group. Howard, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Great to be with you.
Okay, here we're talking about, well, 1 week from election, we're talking about intimidation and rigging and hacking. It's not exactly what we'd like to be talking about, but it's been put on the table again and again and again. Do you have real fears of any or all of these three, Howard? And what about the conversation itself and its influence on the election?
Well, the first thing I would say is that Roger Stone, whom you played a clip from on Alex Jones's alt-right show, is the guy who takes credit for organizing the so-called Brooks Brothers riot, which was a bunch of people in suits and ties who crowded into the county courthouse in Miami to stop the vote recount in 2000.
Bush versus Gore.
And that's something that Roger Stone, who I've known for many years and covered for many years, glories in having done.
That was a critical moment in that
high-tension
election season and a very consequential moment when they just kind of bullied in.
Hugely consequential and arguably was one of the factors in ultimately the election going to George W. Bush. So the people around Donald Trump have a history of using street action, so to speak, to try to influence elections and election counts. I think it would be nice to say that rationality will prevail and that all of the things that were just discussed about the impossibility of wrecking the validity of the American electoral system would penetrate the consciousness of most people in this country. But I fear that if, for example, people are arrested for trying to, quote, poll watch, if they are arrested early in the day on Election Day, which will probably be Roger Stone's plan, that's going to go out on television and that's going to be broadcast everywhere. And I think with the specific intent of trying to create some added urgency on the part of Trump supporters, for example. On the other hand, if there are those kinds of pictures of, quote, poll watching in places like Philadelphia or Cleveland or Miami or Charlotte, to name four big cities and four swing states, then people are going to be worried about voter intimidation. Then that Clinton voters aren't going to be able to get to the polls, and there'll be concern among the Clinton people about getting those people there. So I foresee probably the most chaotic and difficult voting day in modern American history. I wish that weren't the case, but everything that's happened so far indicates that that's going to be what's going on. And in terms of Donald Trump's attitude, he's not operating on the same system everybody else is. He's looking to disrupt the legitimacy of the American election unless he wins it. If he wins it, then everything will be great. You know, it'll be a wonderful system. It'll be a hugely big league system. But if he loses, there's going to be hell to pay, and he's going to try to make sure that his supporters exact it.
We've got a lot of callers for the two of you. Seth in Burlington, Vermont. Seth, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My comment is that I think a lot of the issues that we're seeing with this election are not necessarily because of Donald Trump's rhetoric, but more because of the political climate in general that's led us to this point.
What do you mean exactly, Seth? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean very specifically about the Al Gore-Bush election, where, at least for me, that was the first election that I was really consciously following. Mm-hmm. And to see that the popular vote in the end didn't matter, didn't make the decision, really undermined a lot of my faith in the system in general.
And what about this time? Have you been voting since then? What do you expect when you go to the polls?
I have not voted since then. This is going to be my first presidential election that I'm going to be voting in. I'm not sure. I've been voting in a few of my local elections.
Are you confident about the integrity of the outcome of the vote, Seth?
No. I'm not confident about the outcome of the integrity of the vote, not because of rigged voting, but more because of a flawed system. I think that whether or not it's Donald Trump, there's going to be some Donald Trump figure who will be coming up, and it's going to be the same tensions next election, if not worsened, if something doesn't change.
Have you decided who you're voting for, Seth?
I have not. I am definitely not voting for Donald Trump. I want to help to prevent his power, so I would like to vote for Hillary Clinton, but on a basic level, I don't know if I agree with her. I feel like she's out of touch because of, a number of things that voters and people talk about all the time these days.
Seth, I appreciate your call. Time is short before the break. Jessica Huseman, it must be hard for you to hear that, I guess, given the perspective you're giving us. There's a young voter be his first time to vote in the presidential election and basically not confident in the integrity of that vote.
Right. I didn't hear him say that he was concerned about vote rigging. And there's I guess, a difference between being concerned about the integrity of the vote because you think somebody is going to try and toy with the results of the election and manipulate the vote such that the winner doesn't win. And there's between, I think, the type of doubt that he has, which is doubt in the entire system. And I think that doubt is valid.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Wonder Capital. asking what if you could help combat global climate change and make money at the same time. Introducing Wonder Capital, the award-winning investment platform that allows individuals to invest in solar energy projects across the U.S. Wonder's online investment platform allows you to earn up to 8.5% annually while diversifying your portfolio, curbing pollution, and combating climate change. And best of all, Wonder Capital doesn't take any fees for investing your money. Create an account for free at wondercapital.com/onpoint. Wonder Capital. Do well and do good.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the election 1 week from today and all the talk of rigging, intimidation, and hacking. You can join us. Are you ready, past ready, to just cast your vote? Are you worried about the counting, about the voting process itself, about the aftermath and potential hacking intervention there, or not? And does all this talk just keep people from participating in the most important democratic exercise that we've got, voting? Howard Fineman is here, Global Editorial Director of the Huffington Post Media Group. Jessica Huseman is with us. She is Senior Reporting Fellow with ProPublica. They've got a great big election land team, 400-plus reporters, and more points of observation that will be deployed on Election Day to see what's going on out there. Clint Watts joins us in just a moment to look at the hacking scenario here. I mean, Howard, think with us about next Tuesday. You sort of have to strap on armor to deal with it after all the rhetoric that's been out there these days, just psychologically. But what should people be watching out for in the course of the day? You've painted one scenario that early on in key precincts we see maybe unofficial poll watchers who show up, who are deemed to have created a disruption, who get arrested, and that gets a lot of attention that could call others out in other places. What other kind of choke points in real problem terms or in perception terms will you be paying attention to, Howard?
Well, I think the key, as I was saying before, is to pay attention to big city turnout and precincts and behavior in places like Philadelphia, Cleveland, Miami, and Charlotte.
And what exactly do you mean there? Donald Trump has talked a lot about Philadelphia, just to take one. So
right.
Look out for what?
Well, look out for provocation from the Trump people and defensive measures by the Clinton people and an attempt on one hand to inflame the situation, on the other hand to calm the situation. I think that's the flashpoint that I see. Of course, it could happen anywhere in the country, and I praise ProPublica for its massive effort, attempt to look at every precinct. I mean, there are about 10 states that really determine this, obviously, swing states, and it's precincts within those swing states that determine those swing states. So,
right.
You know, there's certain key precincts, but any place where Donald Trump is in the ball game, where he thinks he's got a chance to win over the Electoral College votes of that state, where they're looking at big Democratic turnout by tradition, not just African-American, but other Hispanic, white, you name it. That's where Roger Stone is going to be looking, and that's where the attention is going to be. And I dare say that's probably where Robbie Moak of the Clinton campaign manager is going to be looking as well. We've come a long way, Tom, since I got into the business, and it was in a period of calm about the majesty and serenity of the polling place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to write these tone poems at Newsweek back when I was at Newsweek about the cathedrals of the little cathedrals of democracy, et cetera.
Yeah, and they were great to write, and it felt great.
Wonderfully
and we all
inspiring.
Came out feeling great about it.
Yes, it was so wonderful and solemn and majestic. I dare say, knowing something about American history and having written a book about it, there have been other times in our long history
not so glorious.
That are not so glorious, and this strikes me as one of those years.
Jessica, what about the concern that Trump raises a lot of actual fraud, you know, in the voting place, personal fraud, individual fraud, people going in and pretending or multiple voting and that kind of thing?
Right. So I think in order to understand why in-person voter fraud is rare, it would be a good logical exercise for everyone to walk through how you would do that. So in order to impersonate another voter, which is the type of fraud Donald Trump talks most often about, people showing up to the polls, voting as dead people, busing from precinct to precinct to precinct and voting several times, you would have to do several things. First, you would have to know that the person you are trying to vote as is not going to vote, so that if they show up later and try to vote and say, well, somebody's already voted as me, that's an immediate flag that voter fraud has happened, and we will deal with it immediately. You would have to know that the person who's not going to vote would not be recognized in that precinct, which is a difficult thing to do because precincts are generally staffed by friends and neighbors in that immediate neighborhood.
Yep.
You would have to look about the age of the person you are trying to impersonate, which I believe is would probably be difficult with most dead people who are presently on the rosters, because the person sitting behind the precinct has access to your registration, which lists your birth date. You would have to be able to mimic the signature of a person who you are trying to vote because they have the signature on the voting roster. So, you know, it's a huge process. I think people who like to use scare tactics about in-person voter fraud like to pretend that it's as easy as walking in and say, hey, I'm Mary Lou Smith. I live down the street. Can I have my ballot? And the precinct worker just says, yeah, sure, here you go. That's not how voting works. This is why in-person voter fraud is incredibly rare.
What's the frequency of it in this country? What do studies show?
Right. So there was a study that was published by The Washington Post not too long ago that took every single ballot cast between 2000 and 2014, which is about 1 billion ballots, and found only 31 instances of credible in-person voter fraud. So just to like break that down for you, you have a greater chance by several measures of getting struck by lightning than you do coming across an actual case of in-person voter fraud. So the concern about in-person voter fraud is overblown, and it in fact overtakes legitimate concerns about other security issues that surround the election. There are huge concerns that not that the voting machines would switch your vote or that they may not count votes accurately, but these voting machines are incredibly old. Most of the voting machines that are out on the market today are the age of the very first iPad. So just let that sink in for a second. That's what we're voting on. That's a concern. The security.
Why is it a concern that they break down or what?
They break down. People do not know how to use them. The screens are bad. They need to be constantly fixed by poll workers. And most poll workers are retirees that are not, as they say, excellent with technology. But they're the ones having to recalibrate these machines all the time.
Yep.
And so we're not really concerned necessarily about the security of the vote. We're concerned about the ability for people to vote in a timely manner and get themselves where they need to be without these machines breaking down or becoming problematic.
Yep.
There are legitimate concerns about mail-in ballots, the security of those. There are legitimate concerns about absentee voting and the security of that. But we are not talking about voter fraud. That's a strong word. We're not talking about security of ballots in places where it actually matters. Instead, we're spending a lot of time talking about voter fraud in a way that cannot logically happen if you think through the steps.
On scale, yes. 31 times out of a billion, not a big number. Jessica Huseman, Howard Feynman, please stand by. Clint Watts joins us right now from Princeton, New Jersey, fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute at the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at the George Washington University. Clint Watts, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Hacking, you think a lot about it. There's been a lot of talk about it in this election season. When you look ahead to next Tuesday and the vote counting that will follow, are there points of vulnerability? If somebody wanted to mess with this election, where might they do it? What might we watch out for?
I think there's a couple ways to think about it, which is the perception of hacking versus actual hacking. The perception of hacking's already happened. They've already tried to hack into voter rolls. We saw that in Illinois and Arizona.
Yep.
It was allegedly, assigned to the Russians. And then there's been other hacking events that have gone on, which people don't attribute or know to. And then there's the component, like you were talking about before, which is actual hacking of the electronic voting systems, which is something that is extremely hard to execute and can only be done in certain states. I think there's about 16 states that have electronic voting machines that are not backed up in some way by paper counts or paper ballots. To do that, as we've talked about before on the show already, you'd have to be hooked to the internet or have an insider, which would actually plant a malicious code or change the integrity of the code or ballots that are being submitted, which is extremely difficult to do. So I don't expect there to be any actual hacking. I think it's the perception more than the reality.
But look at choke points. I mean, we've got very sophisticated hackers around the world now. Fingers have been pointed at Russia. The allegation from the Washington already is that they are engaged with this election. They want to undermine confidence in it. If they were to target something and they're paying attention, if they're paying attention and smart, could they? Is there something they could do that would be hard to untangle and just create a question?
Absolutely, they could do that. But we also
like what?
Have to remember, well, there's two components to this. One, we have to assess, would Russia really want to do that during an actual election day? Because that could be seen as an act of war, disrupting an election so that it can't actually take place or the results would be changed. Could literally be a cyber attack that would bring on conflict.
But by the time you get it tracked down, the election's over, somebody's been declared, I don't know, and you know how hard these things are to track down ultimately. And already Washington's saying, they right. said that these leaks go to the highest ranks of the Kremlin. So already they've got that kind of assertion out there.
Right, and I think that's what we're seeing. They've already achieved what they wanted to, which is to create dissension in the U.S. electorate and to undermine the confidence in the electoral process and democracy. And so the best way and the easiest way to do that is to go after voter rolls. Can you disable voter rolls? Can you change them? Can you deny access to them such that it would be difficult to determine identities at the polling
station? So when people show up on election day, they're not there, or they've got the wrong information attached to their name or something that just gums it up.
Exactly. And if you were to do that in swing states, for example, you would create the belief that we're not really sure who voted or what was counted, and it would create that doubt that you're talking about. The more complex hacking operation would ultimately require an insider to go into terminals to change the actual code behind it, and you'd have to do that on a scale that's quite large. You'd have to do that in multiple precincts. The one advantage we do have about our archaic voting system is that we use different systems in so many different locations that it's really difficult through hacking to compromise the integrity of the total vote count, meaning it would be narrowed down to very select precincts.
Mm-hmm.
It would be hard to actually change the outcome of the election because we use so many different recording mechanisms. You wouldn't be able to hack each one of those individually. And that would actually take a physical act. It would take somebody going in and trying to change the code behind it or acquiring a programmer who could change the way the votes are counted inside the system.
But we don't want to wake up the day after or on election day to sound like this. This was Michelle Reagan, Arizona's Secretary of State, Republican. In September, hackers tried to get into Arizona's voter database. She said the database was not breached, but talked to CBS News here about her reaction when she learned about the attempt.
Shock and dismay, obviously, because we've never had to worry about foreign invaders coming in and trying to mess with our confidence in our election system.
And in Illinois, here was Tom Holbrook, county clerk in St. Clair, Illinois. Hackers targeted there. The state's now saying that the information on about 90,000 voters was breached. He talked with KPLR.
I think it's an absolute travesty. I think this is literally a cyber war on the United States.
Howard Fineman, we are just out in historically ridiculous territory here with the number of realms in which different sectors of the voting public may be concerned about the integrity of this vote. It's a lousy feeling.
Well, I think sometimes that concern has been out there in the past. I think it's always been out there among certain segments of society. What's different is that the candidate himself, particularly Donald Trump, has campaigned against the legitimacy of the very system he's trying to get elected in. And he is writing the story of why he was robbed if he loses. And all too many of his supporters are not only willing to believe it, they're eager to believe it, they're desperate to believe it. And it's that lack of faith in institutions that lies beneath all of this. The political parties are not well regarded as institutions, and yet it's the political parties at the local level that in effect have both cherished the legitimacy of the voting system, have supplied the legitimate poll watchers through the party mechanisms in the states. So as faith in parties declines, as faith in institutions decline,
this is what you get, especially when you have a candidate who is running against legitimacy itself. He's basically saying the only legitimate thing going on is me. And that's a very powerful message and an extremely disruptive one. I would add one other point, which is we're very lucky that this segment of the Founding Fathers' vision of federalism survives. In other words, states' rights has been not only disputed but undermined by various travesties, specifically slavery and racial prejudice. It's been rendered a dirty phrase, states' rights. But in this case, the fact that localism still obtains is a saving grace. I remember going into the Stark County Courthouse in Canton, Ohio, where the election officials are, and marveling at the way the thing looked like the Gringotts Bank in Harry Potter. Piles of paper everywhere, but yet there were people there who knew what each piece of paper meant, and they treasured them. We're lucky that, yes, I'm worried about the ballot machines and the old people tending to the screens, but on balance, we're extremely, extremely lucky that we have a distributed system that is essentially unhackable. That is a accidental gift that's going to save us, I think.
Locally grown. Jessica, just half a minute here. Your advice to voters on Election Day, what to do, what to watch for?
Sure. You know, I think that in the vast majority of precincts, things will be just fine. You will vote as normal. There will be a small number of precincts where problems will occur. We've already seen a few of those problems as we've watched early voting. So if someone tries to disrupt your vote, find a poll watcher, call the police, call the lawyers committee, call Election Land, and we will report on it.
There we are. 1 week before Election Day. What a horizon to look at. But Americans go out and vote, and we look forward to that. It's a great exercise in democracy. Let's make it great by doing it. Jessica Huseman with ProPublica and Election Land, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
Clint Watts at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. Clint, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Howard Fineman, Global Editorial Director for the Huffington Post Media Group. Howard, thank you very much for being here. Good luck to us all, Howard.
Yes, I'm going to head to my local Cathedral of Democracy.
Okay, we'll all see right. You there on bended knee.
Okay.
Thanks
okay.
for joining us. Listeners, thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.